Yo, and welcome to Two Dudes in a Mic Podcast, episode 121, with just Max. That's right, this week we got a special little guest star, one dude, just one mic. Tori is feeling pretty sick, so he's getting some rest, and I'm doing this solo, and this is my first time doing this solo, so who knows how the hell this is going to go, but bear with me on this. Also, sorry this is coming out on a Thursday, a day late, but we're under some pretty strenuous circumstances right now, so I think we can afford this. Let's dive right in. First, we're going to talk about Pope Francis telling... Basically, he sent a big open message to people around the world that... specifically parents of LGBT children, saying that God loves your children as they are. Pope Francis to LGBT children. He greets the crowd as he arrives for his general audience in the San Damasco courtyard of the Vatican on September 16th, 2020. Pope Francis told a group of parents of LGBT children yesterday that God loves your children as they are, and the church loves your children as they are because they are children of God. He did so in a brief encounter with some 40 Italian parents, both mothers and fathers of LGBT children, after the public audience in the Renaissance courtyard of San Damasco in the Vatican. The parents are members of an Italian association, Tenda di Giornata. I did a lot of very violent gesticulation hand movements with that for the full Italian effect. Tenda di Giornata. Jonathan's tent is what it means, which welcomes and provides information to LGBT Christians, their families, and pastoral workers. The association was founded in 2018 by people inspired by a Catholic priest, the late Reverend David Esposito from the Diocese of Fermo in the Marches region of Italy. Mara Grassi, the vice president of the association, together with her husband, Augusto Usai, both wearing masks, presented the Pope with a booklet entitled Genitori Fortunati, Fortunate Parents, that the document experiences of these parents with the church. Mara Grassi told Pope Francis, "We wish to create a bridge to the church so the church, too, can change its way of looking at our children, no longer excluding them, but fully welcoming them." Speaking afterward to Avenir, the daily paper of the Italian Bishops' Conference, Ms. Grassi said she told the Pope that our association aims to foster dialogue between the church and these families. "We consider ourselves fortunate because we had to change the way we had always looked at our children. We found a new way of looking that enabled us to see them in the beauty and love of God." So... essentially an organization that's trying to recontextualize and provide ways of accepting your LGBTQ children, even within the realms of Catholicism, which I think is really good. That's a pretty noble cause right there. According to her account of the conversation, she told Francis, "We wish to create a bridge to the church too can change its way." Yeah, this article is just repeating a bit. Speaking to La Pubblica, the Italian daily, after the audience, Miss Grassi, a Catholic mother of four children, the eldest of whom is gay, now aged 40, said she experienced very strong emotions in her encounter with the Pope. She said that for many years I was like a blind person. After I came to know that my son was gay, I suffered a lot because the rules of the church made me think that he was excluded from the love of God. Nobody helped me. Things changed, she said, when she attended a vigil against homophobia at the Church of Regina Passis in Reggio Emilia, a city in northern Italy. And now Pope Francis has said to all these parents that God loves your children as they are, and the church loves their children as they are. This is ultimately really good, so any Catholics out there, stop being dicks to your kids that want to be accepted because they're gay, or bi, or trans, or any number of things that dumb traditions refuse to accept. And I think it's really good that the Pope is on board with this. I think he said in the past that he's still in sort of a love the sinner, hate the sin position, which, you know, fully love the person and love and support them, but, you know, be upset at the fact that that is technically a sin, which isn't great, but then again, also eating shellfish on Fridays or whatever is a sin. Eating shellfish in general, like wearing mixed cottons is a sin, so, like, there's some wiggle room on those, and I think in modern times there's going to be some wiggle room on that, and the Catholic Church obviously doesn't really do this. It doesn't really work this way. The Pope is supposed to be the direct connection to God, but I don't think he. It's not like the Mormon Church where they sort of just make proclamations on behalf of God. Like in the Mormon Church, for a long time, polygamy was allowed, and black people weren't allowed in the church, and then they weren't allowed in church hierarchy. But over time, as those things became more and more unpopular, the church leadership realized, hey, what if God said that this is okay now? So, lo and behold, the leader of the Mormon Church said that God said that it's okay now, and basically changed things. I don't think that's how it works with the Pope. The Pope wouldn't just say like, hey, God has spoke to me and says that we've got to change these ways. But he can help move the church in a better way, which is really good because obviously these old ways of thinking have hurt many, many people for many, many years. And it's just really good that they're opening up a new path. Of course, there's going to be some people who are very, very upset about this. Many Catholics who are like, that Pope is a traitor to the church, and he's. Why am I doing a Southern accent? It wouldn't be Catholics. It should be Boston. That Pope's a. He's a traitor to the church, and like, I don't approve of that at all, so I'm going to go down to Harvard Yard and I'm going to protest against this Pope because he's not a real Catholic. He's got the devil inside him. Something like that. But. I mean, he's the Pope. What are you going to do? At that point, you just stop being Catholic and you pull a Martin Luther and split off, which, of course, has happened a lot, but the Catholics are a huge, huge demographic around the world, so good on Francis. Good on Francis for trying to move in the right direction a little bit. Moving on from that, the FBI director has announced that, or he says that Antifa is an ideology, not an organization. This is sort of coming in the wake of the past year or two of Antifa gaining popularity, where a lot of either willfully ignorant, no, well, just dumb and ignorant, willfully ignorant, or intentionally malicious and misleading people, like to call Antifa a terrorist organization. I think it was put on like a FBI terrorist watch list or something, or at some one point was going to be put on that. And various bills to the Senate, including one that Ted Cruz tried to push through the Senate, listed Antifa and left-wing activism in general as a terrorist threat. But here's a little thing you need to know about Antifa. It's not an organization. It just means anti-fascist. It means that people who actively work against fascism. Fascism starts as a cancer. It can just start with a few people who want to make it spread, and all that people have to do to let it spread is not do anything, and eventually it'll keep radicalizing people. Fascism is something that needs to be actively fought against. It's the paradox of intolerance. In an ideal society, the only thing that you shouldn't tolerate is intolerance. Now, a lot of people say like, "Oh, well, that just makes you just as bad as the Nazis." But that's a very dumb thing to say. There's like a meme that goes around about it of one person. It's like a badly drawn comic with the text bubbles, and one person with a Nazi patch is saying like, "I want to kill this person because of my hateful ideology," and another person on the other side saying, "I want to stop him from doing that, even if it means resorting to violence." And then there's a guy in the middle saying, "I literally can't tell the difference." Because there is so clearly a difference, a moral difference, a legal difference, an ideological difference. Stopping someone, preventing someone from spreading the message of hate is not the same as hate. It's not the same as just right their intolerance. Because their intolerance is, it's unprovoked. It's just preemptive and just lashing out against people for no good reasons. And stopping against that is an act of self-defense. It's in any nation's interest to prevent fascism from spreading, to prevent hate like that from spreading, in my opinion. And I think that this is the correct opinion. And of course, this is a one-sided dialogue right now. Tory might have different things to say, but this is what I think, and I think it quite strongly. And the FBI director seems to agree with that, which is good. And to reiterate, Antifa, it's not an organization, it's an ideology. It's anyone who actively fights against fascism. There is no Antifa headquarters. It's not a political party. It's not an organization. You can't donate to Antifa. You can't join Antifa. You just become the same way you become a conservative or liberal or leftist or something like that. It's just something that you identify as. Meanwhile, FBI Director Chris Wray has told lawmakers on Thursday that Antifa is an ideology, not an organization, delivering testimony that puts him at odds with President Trump, who has said he would designate it a terror group. Hours after the hearing, Trump took to Twitter to chastise the FBI director for his statements on Antifa and on the Russian election interference, two themes that dominated a congressional hearing on threats to the American homeland. Also, on that note, the Russian election interference, a very, very fucking real thing. Russia. The Cold War has not ended for Russia. We like to think the Cold War has ended because the Berlin Wall came down and the Soviet Union fell. Most of the people who were in charge of the Soviet Union realigned and reshifted, and those same power structures and ideologies are in place in some way in modern-day Russia. And they are still essentially at war with the US, but it's not about nukes anymore, it's about data and information and technology. Russia is probably significantly farther ahead of us when it comes to cyber technology, hacking technology, things like that. And they use it. It is within their interests. Anything that hurts us, that puts us in disorder, is within their interest because it's going to be easier to take over. Not take over, that sounds super villainy. But kind of, yeah, it's going to be easier to move in on places in the rest of the world when we are too busy fighting with ourselves to actually join against them. So, Facebook bots, Twitter bots, huge. Facebook and Twitter bots, huge. And other various ways of interfering with the election. Very real things that Russia does. Very, very real things that we need to be on the lookout for. Anyway, referring to Antifa, the president wrote, "And I look at them as a bunch of well-funded anarchists and thugs, who, those are in caps, who are protected because the Comey Mueller-inspired FBI is simply unable or unwilling to find their funding source and allows them to get away with, quote, murder, law and order." Again, they have no funding source. It's not an organization. It's just a bunch of people who get their own riot gear and decide to go yell in the face of Nazis. Also, I've probably said this before, but there's like one or two cases of like an Antifa member hitting a Nazi, or provoking the violence, seemingly provoking the violence, before. That is also something that these Nazi groups and these very alt-right groups want to try to do. They intentionally be as provocative as possible to try to get Antifa to start the violence, because then that makes the alt-right people look like underdogs. It makes the Antifa look like violent thugs, and then it hurts Antifa, which has happened, and a bunch of people have, again, willfully, ignorantly, and intentionally, misleadingly pulled that narrative. Really, really sucks. Yeah. Not fun. There's actually audio from, I think it was a protest in Oregon. I think it might have been Portland in Oregon, where there was this big alt-right protest and a bunch of Antifa people showed up to get in their face and try to counter-protest them. And the alt-right guys were being extremely provocative, trying to get them to start violence. One of them threw a punch or something like that. And one of the journalists, they're documenting it after some violence had happened and the police came and the thing was broken up, got audio footage of the leader of that alt-right organization. I think he was the leader. He might be connected with the Proud Boys. I don't remember who it is, but he's like a within those circles a well-known fuckhead. Got audio recording of him saying that could not have gone better. So again, that's a very real thing. Fuck that. This anyway, Trump's Twitter, Trump's tweet barbs thrust Ray again into spotlight he has spent 3 years trying to avoid after his predecessor James Comey became entangled in politics before being ultimately fired by Trump. Though Wray said as recently as Thursday that the FBI made unacceptable mistakes during its investigation into ties between the Trump campaign and Russia. Not really. Trump nonetheless has intermittently lashed out at Wray over the pace of fixing those problems and continues to regard his intelligence community with suspicion because of the Russia probe. Wray did not dispute in his testimony on Thursday that Antifa activists were a serious concern, saying that Antifa was a real thing, and the FBI had undertaken any number of properly predicated investigations into what we would describe as a violent anarchist extremists. See, right there, that's being either willfully ignorant or m intentionally misleading. Because Antifa is not a violent anarchist group. Antifa, again, is just in opposition to fascism. Anyone who starts causing violence or being anarchists, extremists, stops being Antifa. Some people might claim, like, no true Scotsman fallacy at that, but it's true. If you start doing that, then you're not Antifa anymore. You're just a fucking asshole who's pretending to be Antifa. Which some people unfortunately do, but that does not represent the rest of people who identify as Antifa. But then Ray went on to say that it's not a group or organization, it's a movement or an ideology. We don't really think of threats in terms of left or right at the FBI. We're focused on violence, not the ideology, he said. He also said that racially motivated violent extremists, such as white supremacists, have been responsible for the most lethal attacks in the US in the recent years. That is true. Far-right extremists are responsible for more deaths than terrorist attacks within the US in the last like 20 years. They're the real terrorists. They're responsible. Muslim terrorists, or other religious fundamentalist terrorists, not really Muslims though, because they're just fucking extremists, the same that, like, the Westboro Baptist Church are barely Christians, they just claim to be. Anyway, yeah, they are of the least concern because the most violent terroristic people in the US are far-right fundamental Christian extremists, like has been shown with many mass shootings over the last 5 years or so. So anyway, this whole thing is, it's good for the FBI director to say this. Not a fan of all of his policies, but it's good that he's trying to make this distinction. And of course, this is getting ignored by Trump and a lot of other conservative politicians in the US. But remember, Antifa is not an organization. It's very important. Moving on from that, we're going to follow up on a bit of TikTok. The US is saying that they will ban WeChat and TikTok downloads on Sunday. The Commerce Department plans to restrict access to TikTok and WeChat on Sunday as the Trump administration's executive orders against the two apps are set to take effect. The department said Friday that as of Sunday, any moves to distribute or maintain WeChat or TikTok on an app store will be prohibited. So I believe this was this past Sunday that this went into effect. I'm not entirely sure. But anyway, while users who have already downloaded the apps may be able to continue using the software, the restrictions mean updated versions of the apps cannot be downloaded. The only real change as of Sunday night will be that TikTok users won't have access to improved apps, updated apps, upgraded apps, or maintenance. And the restrictions targeting WeChat are more extensive. Beginning on Sunday, it will be illegal to host or transfer internet traffic associated with WeChat, the department said in a release. The same will be true for TikTok as of November 12th. TikTok said in a statement that it disagreed with and was disappointed by the administration's announcement. Our community of 100 million US users love TikTok because it's a home for entertainment, self-expression, and connection, the company said, and we're committed to protecting their privacy and safety as we continue working to bring joy to families and meaningful careers to those who are creating our platform. I would argue with meaningful, but careers is certainly a word for the money they make off of it. Tencent, WeChat's owner, said it is reviewing the restrictions outlined by the Commerce Department. Following the initial executive order on August 6th, we've engaged in extensive discussions with the U.S. government and have put forward a comprehensive proposal to address its concerns, Tencent said in a statement. The restrictions announced today are unfortunate, but given our desire to provide ongoing services to our users in the U.S. for whom WeChat is an important communication tool, we will continue to discuss with the government and other stakeholders in the U.S. Ways to achieve a long-term solution. Further restrictions could still be announced later. TikTok employees will be able to receive salaries and benefits in the U.S. and do their day jobs without running afoul of the ban, but the U.S. government suggested that restrictions on TikTok and WeChat would be fairly limited in scope. In a separate filing on September 15th, the government warned that communication over WeChat might be, quote, impaired as a result of forthcoming policies, but that users will not be targeted or subject to penalties. So, I'm kind of two minds about this. I think it's very difficult and very stupid to try to control an app this big, this widespread. But on the other hand, I'm not exactly against this because TikTok is owned by Tencent, and WeChat is owned by Tencent, TikTok might not be Tencent, but it's another big Chinese corporation. Reddit's personally owned by Tencent. I'm not a fan of that, but I still use Reddit, so I'm a fucking hypocrite, whatever. But these Chinese companies, if there's anyone in the world more advanced in cyber technology than Russia, it's China. It is absolutely China. And the amount of data that they could be getting off of your phones through using, or just even having TikTok downloaded on your phones is, at this time, fairly unknown. You know, they say that they only collect a certain amount, and legally they can only collect a certain amount, but it's unclear whether or not the app can actually do more, whether or not it has any virus software in it, such and such and such. China is the biggest threat to world freedom at this moment, and is rapidly descending into a full-on... No, it's already basically a full-on dictatorship, because he's president for life now, and they're committing genocides against people in their country. Goddamn. Also, though, TikTok is an incredibly widespread app. A lot of people use it, a lot of people really love it. I have friends who use it and like it. I still don't really understand it, it's not my thing, whatever. But it's very big. It's concerning. I don't know. If TikTok dies, something else will eventually fill its place. The same thing that happened to Vine. But for now, be careful what you put on TikTok. Definitely be careful. Moving on from that, hopping back over to the US, in Maine. Ranked choice voting in Maine is a go for the presidential election. Basically, the state of Maine has voted that for the first time in a presidential race, they're going to use ranked choice voting. The article goes on to say a lot about this, the process that led up to this. I don't really give a shit about that. I don't really give a shit about the process that led up to this. It was a lot of boring voting and, like, lobbying and activism and more voting and stuff. And very, very, very good job to all those people. Incredibly good job to all those people. But I just sort of wanted to touch in on this because this is an important thing that really needs to happen in the rest of the U.S. Ranked choice voting is you vote for your first choice. So there's going to be like three, five, however many slots, like a tier of people. You put your first choice candidate there. So say you want to vote. So you want to vote Biden, first choice there. Second choice, vote, I don't know, the Green Party, whatever, whoever they're running. Third choice, go ahead and put Kanye or something. No. Let me restart that. First choice, put Kanye. You put your first choice as Kanye. Second choice, your Green Party candidate. Third choice, Biden. Blah, 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 blah. Obviously, Kanye is not going to win. And normally, under normal voting, you would have one vote that goes to Kanye. Kanye doesn't win. That vote is essentially wasted. There's people who would argue that... I'll get to that in a second, never mind. Under ranked choice voting, yeah, one Kanye, two Green Party, three Biden. Kanye doesn't win, obviously. Everyone who puts their first choice for Kanye That vote then goes to their second choice. So your vote, instead of going to Kanye after he's basically been disqualified, that vote then transfers to your second choice. Say that's the Green Party person. They're obviously also not going to win. So then that vote transfers to your third choice, Biden. And you do this with however many candidates there are on the ballot. This makes it impossible to waste a vote. I believe it is absolutely possible to waste a vote under the current single choice system. Some people would argue against that. Some people would argue that it is not a waste of a vote to vote third party. I strongly disagree with that sentiment because in the US, either a Democrat or a Republican will win the election. Those are the two big parties. It is a two-party system in the US with occasionally a couple fucking ridiculous outliers. You might have an independent or two. You might have a couple of Libertarian or Green Party voters. But it's going to be mostly Democrat or Republican, almost entirely. You can vote for a Green Party or Libertarian candidate. You can absolutely do that. But you know that the outcome is going to be either Democrat or Republican. You know that your vote is not going to be successful for the Green Party or Libertarian, third party candidate. It's just gone then. It's gone. It's thrown away. Some people claim that it's a valid strategy to use third party votes to sway an election. Something like this, where it seems that Trump and Biden are fairly close. If enough people from the Republican side vote for a Libertarian candidate and Trump loses, then it becomes a little bit more clear to the Republicans that they need to win back those voters. Same thing with Biden. If enough fucking Bernie bro idiots vote for a Green Party candidate or a Libertarian candidate or fucking Kanye West instead of Biden, because they never want to vote for Biden, and they want to make a statement to the Democratic Party that the Democratic Party needs to change and stop being so establishment. And because they don't vote for Biden, Biden loses. Then they make that statement, and the Democratic Party sees that they need to win those voters back. That's kind of valid. I guess that is a strategy that might work, but it's effectively like shooting yourself in the kneecap because you will get ice cream at the hospital 2 weeks later. Not voting for Biden because you want to show the Democratic Party that you're dissatisfied. If you want leftist ideals in the Democratic Party and you don't vote for Biden, you're shooting yourself in the foot and you're shooting the country in the foot because Trump is going to make things worse. It's ridiculous. It's single-minded, and it's instant gratification. There's no forethought to it. It's impulsive. It's a bad, bad thing. Because it's going to make it so much more difficult for anyone to get anything done if the polar opposition to what you believe wins instead, because you don't like your choice enough. The current system does suck. The two-party system is terrible. Which is why, instead of trying to sway the votes with third-party candidates, push for ranked choice voting. It becomes impossible to waste a vote. You can make a statement and have that be seen and still not compromise an election and not shoot yourself in the foot through something like that. Good fucking job, Maine. Hopefully, more states start doing this in the future. And now, for the final thing I want to talk about here. Touching in on hurricanes, storm systems, I just thought this was a neat little story. Tropical Storm Wilfred formed in the Atlantic Ocean on Friday. Now, anyone who knows things about tropical storms and hurricanes knows that they'll hear that Wilfred, and they'll hear that hey, that's pretty close to the end of the alphabet, because tropical storms and hurricanes are named throughout the year using letters of the alphabet in sequential order. So the first storm of the year will have a name that starts with an A. So like Hurricane Katrina, that was the 10th. That was the 10th storm in that year. Hurricane Sandy was the fucking however many letters into the alphabet S is. That is how this works. Wilfred is very fucking close to the end of the alphabet, you might notice. And you might be very hard pressed to think of names that begin with X, Y, or Z. So Wilfred is the last on this list of predetermined 2020 hurricane names. And these are predetermined. They plan these out in advance. They don't just decide them once the storm forms. So when a new subtropical storm popped up a few hours later, it was time to go to the backup plan. As expected, 2020 has been a very busy season. The National Hurricane Center says Wilfred is the earliest 21st named storm on record, forming about 3 weeks earlier than Vince did back in 2005. And with over 2 months left in their official hurricane season, forecasters expect plenty more storms. That means we'll all need to brush up on our Greek, because now they're gonna start calling things alpha, beta, gamma, etc., like that. Some background. Initially, military meteorologists used a haphazard system involving phonetic alphabet to name storms, giving us hurricanes Baker, Dog, and Easy in 1950, for example. The U.S. Weather Bureau began creating more familiar lists of storm names in 1953. They were all women's names at first, but that changed in 78 at the direction of the then Secretary of Commerce, Juanita Kreps. Probably because it seems really passive-aggressive misogynist to name deadly fucking giant storms only women's names. That's a yikes. Good job on changing that, Juanita. The 21 name lists, one for each letter of the alphabet minus the less common letters Q, U, X, Y, and Z, are now maintained and updated by an international committee of the World Meteorological Organization. Six lists are used in rotation and recycled every 6 years, meaning the 2020 list will be used again in 2026. The names are only retired if the storm is so deadly or costly that the future use of its name on a different storm would be inappropriate and insensitive. So there's never going to be another Hurricane Andrew, another Hurricane Katrina, another Hurricane Sandy. Those are locked in. They got to find other things. When all 21 names are used up in the season, the Greek alphabet is used. Alpha was pressed into service when a small subtropical formation formed in the far eastern Atlantic this afternoon. Beta followed hours later as Tropical Depression 22 strengthened to a tropical storm in the Gulf of Mexico. The Greek alphabet has only been used once in 2005, the year that gave us hurricanes Katrina, Rita, and Wilma. The names Alpha, Beta, Gamma, Delta, Epsilon, and Zeta were all used that year. Greek alphabet goes Alpha, Beta, Gamma, Delta, Epsilon, Zeta, Eta, Theta, Iota, Kappa, Lambda, Mu, Nu, Xi, Omicron, Pi, Rho, Sigma, Tau, Epsilon, Phi, Chi, Psi, Omega. So that's what they're dipping into. This is essentially when you're making like a spreadsheet and you have so many columns, it goes through a blah blah blah, A B, blah 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 blah, X, Y, Z, and it starts doing like A, A B, A C, A D. It's that shit. But with storms, global warming is gonna destroy the world. So yeah, this is just kind of neat. This is only the second time this has ever happened with the modern system. Neat little thing. This is cool. They also included a list of retired Atlantic hurricane names, and the last year that they were used. Agnes, Alicia, Alan, Allison, Andrew, Anita, Audrey, Betsy, Beulah, Bob, Camille, Carla, Carmen, Caro, Celia, Caesar, Charlie, Cleo, Connie, David, Dean, Dennis, Diana, Diane, Diana and Diane, that's weirdly close. Donna, Dora, Edna Mode, Elena, Eloise, Erica, Fabian, oh, Fabian would be such a cool storm name. Felix, Fifi, that's adorable. Flora, Florence, Floyd, Fran, Fran Dresch is coming in to ruin the coastline. Francis, Frederick, George, Georges? Georges. That's George with an S at the end. Yorye, I don't know. That was 1998. Gilbert, Gloria, Greta, Gustav, Harvey, Hattie, Hazel, Hilda, Hortense, oof, Hugo, Igor. It's pronounced Igor, not Eagle. Ike, Inez, Ingrid, Ione, Ione, Irene, Iris, Irma, Isabel, Isidore. I was hoping that would be Isildur. Hurricane Tropical Storm Isildur. Ivan, Janet, Jean, Jan, Jean. I don't know. Joan, Joaquin, Juan, Katrina, ouch, Keith, Klaus, Kenny, Lily, Louise, Maria, 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 Marilyn, Matthew, Michael, Michelle, Mitch, Nate, Noel, Opal, Otto, Palome, Opal, that's the stripper storm, Otto, Paloma, Rita, Roxanne, Sandys, Stan, Thomas, and Wilma. So that's a neat little fact for you there. Moving on from that, gonna dive into random quarantine picks, RQP. Obviously I only have one this week, so I'm doing this alone and I feel so lonely and I miss my friend, but I'm clearly going off the rails a bit. I need to start wrapping this up. My random quarantine pick for this week will be the album by Stephen Wilson, Hand Cannot Erase. The album is... How long is this album? I'm going to look this up real fast. You might hear my keyboard clacking. Stephen Wilson, one of my favorite musicians in the world, has done... I would describe his music the most as progressive, because he's done, like, prog rock, but also indie-sounding, but it's not confined to just prog rock, or metal, but just incredibly... interesting, unique music that I haven't heard much else that sounds like it, that is this well done. He used to be, he was basically the leader, the founder and leader of the band Porcupine Tree, which had a run of really, really fucking great albums. And he's been having his solo career since about 2012, as Stephen Wilson. He's released 5 or 6 albums under that. He's got a new one coming out fairly soon. But right now I'm talking about Hand Cannot Erase, his album from 2015. It's heartbreaking, it's beautiful, it's powerful, it's awesome as fuck. It's pretty depressing. He writes a lot of depressing music. This one was inspired by the real event of a woman, I can't remember her name right now, but a woman who... died on around Christmas Eve in London, and no one found her for 3 years. She died in her apartment with the TV on, and she had her payments, her like electrical payments and things, set up through an automatic payment system through her bank, and they just kept getting paid until the money ran out 3 years later, and no one checked on her. No one who might have been in her life contacted her for 3 years, tried to contact her. They might have tried, but they didn't follow up. Just this incredibly sort of sad, lonely story. But Stephen Wilson takes that inspiration from that story, turns it into this huge concept album, and makes it profoundly beautiful and touching, and also quite melancholy at the same time. I'm sounding really fucking pretentious right now. The title track, Hand Cannot Erase, is awesome. It's a really great sort of pop rock track. First Regret / 3 Years Older is 12 minutes long, and it's amazing through every single aspect of it. It's some of the best musicianship I've ever heard. The drumming on this album is insane. Routine is about a woman trying to come to grips with her life after her kids died in a fucking school shooting. God, it's so depressing. The music video for it is ruining. This album is so good. It's 1 hour and 5 minutes long. Listen to it. Enjoy it. Get sad. Look up the cool concept website that came out along with it. Really great. Moving on from that, going on to an ORQ. I only have one this week because these things are hard to find, and... you're not going to get much varying things. I don't know. What's my favorite pizza? Fucking Hawaiian. Whatever. Crucify me. Pineapple on pizza tastes good. It's a good flavor combination. Fuck off. You probably just haven't tried it. Anyway, the actual thing I want to talk about is something I saw on Reddit earlier today. Or yesterday. Something like that. The question was basically, what is the minimum someone would have to do to you? What is the minimum amount... the lowest, least aggressive thing that someone would have to do to you to make you want and try to saw their head off. Actively and viscerally saw their head off. And I've been thinking about that a bit all day, and it's like, you know, someone brake checks me on the road, that's going to make me angry. It's not going to want to make me kill them. And even things that might want to make me kill someone, it wouldn't be like a quick kill. This is sawing someone's head off, so taking a fucking like wood saw, like a handsaw that you go back and forth and sawing someone's head off. I don't know if they have to be still alive while it's happening, but just how what would be the minimum someone would have to do to you to bring out that level of hatred and frustration? I think someone actively trying to like screw with me or like try to run me over if I was on the road, like walking along a road or biking or something, and someone was actively trying to like fuck me up. That might do it. That might do it. That would be pretty intense. Yeah, and of course, you know, pedophiles, rapists, dictators, all those guys. I would love to saw some heads off of those guys. But the minimum, like, everyday thing that someone would have to do to me. Ooh, if someone, like, every time I was about to eat a meal for, like, 3 days, threw that meal in the trash and just prevented me from eating what I actually wanted for 3 days. It might be a bit more than 3 days, maybe, like, 5 days. That would probably make me want to actively saw their head off. Yeah. That'd probably do it. Or someone who killed my cat. If someone killed my cat, I would go fucking John Wick on them with a goddamn handsaw. Like, no question. I don't have a cat right now, but if I did, I would love him very much. And if anyone hurt him, I would want to try to saw their head off. So don't fuck with my cat, y'all. When Tori's back on, I'm gonna ask him this because I think this is a fun prompt. Yeah, I think that's about it for the day. I hope you enjoyed this. Sorry it's a bit short, but there's only one of me, and I can only talk for so long by myself without running out of things to say, going off the rails a little bit, and my voice getting hoarse. Tori should be back next week. My audio should be better next week. Yeah. That's all I got. Peace, motherfuckers. Woo!